So picture this with me. Wall Street, September 15th, 2008. Investment broker on the phone with his biggest client says, "Master, we pretty much lost it all, every last cent." "What'd you do with it?" he replied. "Well, I invested in Lehman Brothers, and it didn't go so well." "Why'd you do that?" he says. "Well, you see, everything kept going up and up and up, and it looked like such a strong investment, and I never dreamed something like this would happen. It just seemed like a great way of handling your money." He replies, "Well, to be honest with you, I probably would have done exactly the same thing. So, what'd you learn?" "I guess not to put all your eggs in one basket. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but if you don't play at all, then you're never going to get to win." "That's great," he replies. "Good work. Now here's another million. See what you can do with it." And you know, that's pretty much gets to the heart of what Jesus is saying in the gospel. I think that Jesus is telling us that life is risky. And Christian life, instead of being safer, is actually about being more risky. Three examples are held up in the parable. Each one is given a huge amount of money. How much is not exactly the point, but the point is that they receive more than enough. They receive an abundance. And each makes specific choices about what to do with that gift. Two use their gifts to make a handsome return. The third fails to do anything at all. He simply holds on to it. It is, of course, this third person that our attention is directed to. And his thinking is made absolutely clear for us to observe. Why doesn't he do anything else than preserve the gift? In a word, fear. "I knew you were a harsh master, so I figured it would be smart to play it safe. I was afraid. I hid what you gave me and saved it for your return." "I was afraid," he says. And because of that fear, he takes the safe course of action. And of course, what we discover along with him is that ultimately what looks like the safe course turns out not to be safe at all. In his haste to preserve what he has, he loses absolutely everything. As the investment version of this parable tells us, if we don't play, we cannot win. God calls us to take risks with the gifts that God has given us. The unfortunate thing is that it seems too often the Christian church has been too anxious and forgets about this. When I talk to non-church people, the image of church that they have is that we are anything but risk takers. For most people, the church is thought of as anything but a place of challenge, let alone growth. For most, we are a place of refuge from risk, a place where we can run in order to avoid hardship or difficulty, a safe haven from change and challenge. Have you ever noticed how most churches seem to spend a tremendous amount of time and energy talking about how the way things used to be? Most of us have heard the variation of the seven last words of Jesus on the cross, the one which are called the seven last words of the Episcopal Church. You've heard them. I'm sure you have. We have always done it that way. Years ago, we used to fill in the blank. Call them the seven last words, or maybe the seven deadly sentiments. But no matter how you slice it, they're disturbing. I've heard such words spoken at every level of the church, from the smallest parish to the largest, from diocese to denomination to worldwide communion. It's not often that we encounter Christian communities that are consciously, actively looking to change, be challenged, and grow. And I don't mean to be harsh or unkind about this, but I do mean to be clear and to say that these perspectives are not healthy. And in fact, they're fundamentally unfaithful. Unfaithful because they utterly run contrary to what Jesus teaches. When we become focused on safety and security, when we shun and avoid all challenge and change, what we're saying, whether we mean to say it or not, is that God is not faithful. Somehow we're convinced that God can't be trusted. It's sort of like the people of Israel saying they'd rather remain slaves in Egypt than to trust that God would be with them in the wilderness. But we can take some comfort because this is nothing new. Matthew was experiencing the same things. And 1,500 years ago, the desert father, Abba Doulos, and his teacher, Abba Bisaran, were walking by the sea, and they discovered another way of seeing this. "Father," Doulos said to Bisaran, "I am thirsty." Bisaran said a prayer over water, and then to Doulos, "Drink this seawater." Doulos drank. And he discovered that far from being salty any longer, the water had become sweet, wonderfully sweet. So sweet, in fact, that he poured some into his leather bottle. Bisaran observed his disciple's action and then asked him why he was saving some of the water. "Forgive me," Doulos replied. "It is out of fear of being thirsty later on." Bisaran replied with a short, pointed comment. God was here. God is here. God will be here. God will be everywhere. God is here. God is everywhere. Perhaps we might at times want to remember that. You see, if our cause is worthy, when we trust in God, there is absolutely nothing we need to be afraid of. Keep that in mind. Keep that in mind, particularly in the days ahead in the wake of a grand jury announcement. We have nothing to fear. Nothing. No risk is too great, no challenge too hard, no challenge too difficult. Truth be told, Jesus reminds us and keeps reminding us that God is not some sort of CEO in the sky waiting to pounce on us when we make bad investments. God does not abandon us. God is here. God will always be here, investing in us over time, relentlessly and recklessly investing in us so that we can invest in the world. There is nothing to fear. In 1994, at his inauguration as president of South Africa, Nelson Mandela spoke to his country. He said, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. Mandela then goes on to say, we ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, he said, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Playing small doesn't serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We were born to make manifest nothing less than the glory of God that is within us. It is not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And when we let our light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. We are liberated from our fear. Our promise and our presence will actually liberate others as well. So I think Jesus' words are liberating. They're words that can set us free from our fears, free to change, free to grow, free to challenge and to be challenged. And as Mandela reminds us, we are children of God. Brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous. Our playing small does not serve the world. When at long last we are liberated from our fears, then we can and will become a liberating force that God calls us to be. Fearless and relentless and reckless bearers of the gifts of God's great and gracious love for all. Amen.